This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Phil Davin, coming up on this program. In a special program, we are joined by a panel of guests who are here to explore relations between Israelis who are Jewish and Israelis who are Arab, but of course looking at potentially the knock-on effect of the wider world as well in light of the recent situation that has been occurring in the Middle East. We will get their opinions on what needs to change, how it can change, and hopefully, more importantly, what can be done to make the more important step towards peace in the region. Well, welcome along to this edition of the Jewish News Podcast. Let's start off by introducing our panel. We begin with Saad Borom, who's Palestinian, who lives in Israel, and an alumni of the Peres Center. Yarden Liel, who's deputy director of the Peres Center. We also have Amon Beretsolzianu, who's the co-CEO of the Abraham Initiatives, and ably assisting me all the way throughout this rather sensitive subject is Michael Daventry, foreign editor of the Jewish News. Welcome to you all. I think that the first step we need to take is explain a little bit about backgrounds so we have a clear understanding of why everyone is here. Amnon, if we start with you, if that's okay, perhaps you'd be so good as to just tell us, for those who don't know, what the Abraham Initiatives does.
So, Phil, the Abraham Initiatives is an Israeli charity and non-governmental organization, Jewish and Arab, established some 30 years ago in order to nurture good relations based on equality between Israel's Jewish and Palestinian citizens. And we carry out our mission through carrying out initiatives on the ground in the areas of education and partnership between Jews and Arabs, with the hope that once those initiatives will be recognized as beneficial, they will be adopted and scaled by the Israeli government and implemented throughout Israel.
And Yarden, please, if you'd please explain what it is that, for those who may not know, what the Peres Center does.
So the Peres Center for Peace and Innovation was established 25 years ago by Israel's 8th Prime Minister and 9th President, Shimon Peres. And the original thought and target and aim was to privatize peace building. So to put peace building in the hands of citizens, understanding or his understanding as a statesman and as a statesman who was known to promote peace between Israel and its neighbors, that it didn't really matter how many pieces of paper were signed if citizens, if civil society wouldn't stand behind those agreements, they wouldn't hold water. And so we've, for the past 25 years, have been focusing on programs that bring together both Israelis and Palestinians of East Jerusalem, West Bank, and Gaza, but also very much focusing on the relationships between Jews and Arabs who are citizens of Israel. So our programming focuses on diverse groups, literally from 0 to 120 in terms of ages, utilizing sports and education, technology, innovation, medicine, healthcare, agriculture, the environment, business, and so on and so on, to bring people together in impactful programming.
Now, Saad, thank you for that. Saad, you said that, and I introduced you accordingly, that you identify as Palestinian who lives in Israel. I think straight away we need to get an insight, because one thing that has come up time and time again, certainly during the recent conflicts, but for a great number of years, is people saying that Palestinians or those who are Arab Israeli are treated differently to their Jewish counterparts. And I need to know, from your perspective, how do you find it living in Israel? Are you treated differently? Do you feel different based on that?
Of course, I feel different. You know, because of my long hair, and not today, but yesterday, they all think that I'm Jewish or something. So they treated me well as I look. But when I get to the airport and when I travel with my mother, that she wearing the hijab, people looks at me in a different way. And especially in the airports, you know, and checkpoints, when I moved to some town in the West Bank or with my family or something like that, yeah, I feel that a lot. Like, so, but in the other side, I do a lot of things in here, you know. I grew up with the project with the Paris Center. Like, I started when I was like 12 or 13 years old with the projects with the Paris Center for Peace in the sports project. And I moved on from there to understand why people act like this. And today, like, I understand more than I did before. So I'm trying to explain to people that what we are doing in here, I think that I can do a lot of things, go to college or university or study or in this places, I feel less like an Arab or Jews or something like that. Like, there's no difference sometimes, but in some points and in my life, I feel that a lot. Yeah, it depends.
I'm finding what Saad was saying very interesting, not least from a non-Israeli point of view. I'm the one person in the panel, apart from you, who isn't out there at the moment. And I find it interesting because, I mean, some basic facts. Around a fifth of Israel's population is Arab or Palestinian, and that label is very contentious in itself. But what I think some of the people listening to this podcast will be interested to note is how much of a generational shift there has been. If you are listening to this and you are over the age of, let's say, 35 or 40, and you remember, for instance, the Oslo Accords and the fact that there was this huge feeling of optimism in the middle of the 90s when Yasser Arafat and Yitzhak Rabin and Shimon Peres, of course, after that, started signing these agreements, and there was this grand vision for the possibility where there would be a two-state solution, a state of Israel and a state of Palestine, and finally peace in this decades or centuries old conflict. There was a feeling of optimism there, but we're now, you know, 20, 30 years beyond that, and there's been a whole generation that has been born and has grown up, and I don't want to speak for Saad, but Saad looks to me like he's certainly young enough perhaps to remember the Oslo Accords, possibly, but certainly not, you weren't an adult at the time. And we're doing this on Zoom, and he's smiling at me, so I'm guessing that I'm not, he's shaking his head, so I think I'm right here. So my point is this: this conflict has morphed into something different. And because we now have people who are old enough to have children, but are too young to remember the Oslo Accords, this external non-Israeli foreign view that we have here in Britain of Israelis and Palestinians only need to get around the table and they can sort it all out has changed. So I find it very interesting, Saad, that you're referring to yourself there as a Palestinian living in Israel rather than an Israeli Arab, because it's Israeli Arab is a very convenient label for us, because we get to say, oh, you're Israeli, but you're not Jewish. But
yeah,
it's yeah, not the same,
I want to explain that when I started with the Paris Center for Peace, like many years ago, I'm 29 today. When I started, like at the age of 12, 13, I consider myself as Israeli and Arab. I can tell you that with time move on and people treated me like different, like something else, I understood that maybe I am something else. So I started to ask myself a lot of questions. Like, I have an Jewish friends who can tell me that you can be with my sister ever only because you are Arab. I can't see you with a Jewish lady because you're Arab and you're not allowed to. So these things and more like gave me the feeling that maybe I am different. Maybe so I asked my father, like, he's almost 80, 81. So I asked him, like, what are we? Like, explain to me. And he just told me that I was born before Israel, so you can choose, like it's yours, like do whatever you want, like no one can tell you what you are, it's in your heart. So I think when people just put me in some box, looked at me in this way, maybe it convinced me like that I'm different, and now I'm fighting that I'm not different. So it's complicated. So,
well, one thing that I would say that stands out straight away from the way you're talking, Saad, is that straight away you're talking about boxes and you're talking about labeling, as we would call it in English. And I wonder, yeah, Amnon, whether or not if that's part and parcel of the problem, is that we're so programmed, frankly, whether you're in Israel, whether you're in the UK, wherever it is, they're so programmed to take sides on this matter, rather than look at actually saying we all have a great love for the land of Israel in whatever way you want to look at it and however you want to feel. But the fact that we have to feel like we need to take sides to say, okay, well, I'm from Israeli background, I'm from Palestinian background, and I'm British, and I'm going to choose one side or the other. Is that part and parcel of the problem, do you think, Amnon?
I think that it is not a personal issue. Israel is defined as a Jewish state, which implies automatically that non-Jews have a less of a connection, of a linkage to the state. The definition of the state as a Jewish state, Jewish and democratic, means that if you're not Jewish, that if you belong to a different nationality in Israel, if you're a Palestinian, and this, we are talking about a group of indigenous minority in Israel, the Palestinian people, and they are Palestinian because they are part of the Palestinian people outside of Israel, and they are in fact not only discriminated against according to the definition of Israel, to the mission statement of this country, but also de facto, the Arab minority in Israel is discriminated in every aspect that you can only imagine. Infrastructures and education, accessibility to services, representation in politics and in the administration, underrepresentation in the Israeli media and bias against them in the Israeli media. Almost in anything that you can imagine, the Arab minority in Israel is not equal to the Jewish majority. And this is something that we should come to terms with. And also the multiple identity of those people. We at the Abraham Initiative, one of our major efforts recently has been to normalize the dual identity, the multiple identity of Israeli Arab citizens as Palestinians. And we are telling to mainstream Israelis, enough of demanding from Israeli Arabs to take sides. They can be perfectly Palestinians and perfect Israelis at the same time, and they don't need to choose because they are both. They are really both, exactly as American Jews or Jews who are living in the UK. They can be perfectly Zionist and perfectly Jews and at the same time be loyal and feel very happy with their British identity. And I think that Israeli society is now wise enough and smart enough, and eventually it can understand that this is the case and we have to accept it.
Yarden, just to come to you, because I'm got to be perfectly honest with you, Amnon just said that, it's just blown me away because I've never actually heard it put like that before by someone who is Israeli, to the point where, if I'm honest, I've always heard this great defense for Israel, especially when people accuse the Jewish state of being, and this really annoys the heck out of me, if I'm honest with you, it accuses the Jewish state of being an apartheid state. Now, I have to tell you, I'm declaring right here and now, that my family are half from South Africa, and they grew up in the apartheid era. They know what apartheid is. Israel is not an apartheid state. It may have issues that it needs to work on to try and secure equality for all citizens. But to be honest with you, we have equality issues here in the UK, so no country is perfect. But from your perspective, what needs to change? Because obviously what Amnon is saying there is that frankly, that there are faults in Israel in exactly the same way there's faults in many countries.
Yeah, and I think this example also about the conversation about apartheid and so on brings me to also looking at Saad and his ability to hold new ones. So the Paris Centre is a non-political organisation, and we try to, we're very careful in crossing that line also in conversations that we have. So even here, I need to be sensitive to that, but I can talk about what we're trying to achieve with our programming and with our participants and in the kind of space we want to hold as an organization, understanding that there is room for so many different kinds of work in this field. And the Abraham Initiatives is just one absolutely remarkable example of an Israeli organization that's doing really important work. But Saad, and I've known him more or less since he was 12, and which comes to show how old I am, because I was already a grown-up working at the Paris Centre, but he has a very unique ability to hold nuance and hold that space of complexity and saying there are a million different shades of, you know, I would want to say gray, but then they published that book and completely, you know, can't say that anymore. But there's nuance, there are different shades of color, that, and you can be in that and still be Israeli and still have a complex identity that doesn't say anything about my identity and doesn't stand opposed to my identity. And I think that's something that we try to achieve in our programming, especially in our peace education programming, which Saad is an alumni of and today is a program manager in, to have that space to show that we are who we are and we can have an honest and fulfilling and respectful conversation with the other without being scared of their otherness, rather than giving that room and space. And in Israel, we've had these challenges also within our communities, right? So the Jewish community is really diverse. You've got secular and Jew and religious and Orthodox and non-Orthodox. You have immigrants from Olim, immigrants from Europe and from North Africa. And so we've had that diversity. The Arab community has diversity, right? Bedouins of the south and Arabs of the north and Christians and Muslims and Jews. We are a diverse community and we've been very, very busy at always looking at the otherness in front of us as a threat to our own identity. And so when we try to create a safe space for us to hold, to be who we are, it creates the kind of respect and our ability to see the other, not to be afraid of the other, not to develop stereotypes, not to develop the fear and through that, the violence that we've seen. And I think that's our major challenge. It starts in the school system, right? Israeli school system is segregated into four different kinds of schools. You have regular schools, you have Arab schools, you have religious schools, and then you have ultra-Orthodox schools. Just by that, we teach, we educate our children that there is difference and this difference needs to keep us in a box, right? So as much as we can bring these children together, maybe, I don't know, I'm not, you know, the Minister of Education, maybe we need to have them in separate school systems, I don't know. But when we bring them together and show them that this otherness is a strength, it's not a reason to fear or to hate, I think that's really, really important. And every time there's an escalation in violence, that fear, those stereotypes, that otherness is very, very tangible. And this recent escalation in violence was the peak of that, right? So up till now, when we had escalations in violence with Gaza, it was Israel and Israelis and Palestinians of Gaza, which was bad enough, right? Because no one saw the suffering of both sides. You're on your end. This is who you are. There's no room to see, you know, the pain and the suffering of the other side. But this time, it went into Israeli society proper. And here, walking the streets where, you know, the Paris Center is based in Jaffa, it's our home. Walking the streets in Jaffa of our neighbors and our friends, all of a sudden this otherness became tangible. Right. And it was very, very scary. So again, Saad is for me, as looking at him as an alumni and also as a colleague, has this remarkable ability to hold space for everything, for who he is, for whose identity is, which makes him a remarkable project manager for the hundreds and hundreds of children he's working with both Jews and Arabs today in a program that he's managing. So that's what I hope as an organization, as a Paris Center, is our little addition, our little help that we can bring when we're talking about educational programming.
Fascinating stuff what you're saying there, Yarden, because actually the notion of otherness has suddenly shed a whole new light on this for me, if I'm honest with you, because up until now, I've sort of seen this as a case of, I've seen it kind of as a case of primarily two religions disliking each other, but it actually seems that it's a lot deeper than that and possibly more relatable to them in the UK than we may be forgiven for thinking it is, because it seems to be deep-rooted divisions. Because, for example, over here in the UK, we have equality problems, whether it be between men and women, for example. We also have religion schools. So, of course, that teaches people to stick together, stick to your own kind, as it were. We also have issues surrounding even the vulgar problem of, you know, the colour of people's skin. People seem to be judged on that. And from what I gather, you're saying, is that actually Israel is not really any different in that sense, in so much as that people are kind of looking for differences and feeling threatened by those differences. But Saad, from your point of view, when you walk around the streets at the moment, what's the situation like right now? Would you say that you feel as nervous as Yarden was saying that she sort of has felt recently walking in Jaffa?
I think so. Yeah, I have to say that when all what happened, so I didn't go out from my house like for 7 or 10 days. Like, I called my manager and I told her that I cannot come and I cannot go out even from my house to buy something or to do something or like nothing. It was like an holiday, and Muslims holiday, and my parents celebrating, and there's no celebration, nothing, because we cannot go out. Like it was really scary to go out. So I didn't, not in Jaffa, not in Rafah, where I'm living, not anywhere. So, but now it's different. Like, few weeks after, like 2 weeks after, I think more safe. Like, people started to understand that it's not the way, maybe. And I want to believe that they think so.
And Amnon, from your perspective, you seem to be, from what I've gathered, a bit of a voice of reason. It's disappointing to think that the Abraham Initiatives is non-governmental organization, because frankly, I feel like government could really benefit, frankly, from your sort of level-headed thinking. What needs to change? What can Israeli citizens, no matter whether they are of Arab background, whether they're of Jewish background, whatever the background, it doesn't matter. What can Israeli citizens do, and what should they be doing moving forward, do you think?
So first of all, we need to realize Israeli society is extremely diverse, but the meta or mega rift within Israeli society exists between the two national groups. You know, there are so many groups within the Jewish community, within the Arab community, but there are only two national groups in Israel. There is the Jewish majority and the Palestinian minority. And it's time for Israel to realize the state, to realize that this is the number one issue. Creating a truly shared and equal society in Israel should be the number one priority. And our situation is no different than what we remember from Northern Ireland, from Belgium, from the Balkans back in the 90s. What is happening in Israel is that we can pretty rapidly deteriorate into a true civil war between Jews and Arabs. This is extremely alarming, and I think that it's time for the Israeli government and the leadership of the Arab community to wake up and to realize that it's time to change our reality in a way to create Israel as an exclusive, truly inclusive, and welcoming community society for all of its citizens. And this is what should be done in Israel in the years to come. This is the number one challenge of Israel?
What I was struck by what Amnon Yadin and Saad were all saying was interesting. I have to bring in a non-Israeli, non-Palestinian external perspective to all this because, I mean, we at the Jewish News, of course, were following very closely what happened over the past month and a bit, and the British Jewish community were following it very closely as well. And there was a profound sense of shock here, not just because of the conflict between Israel and with Palestinians in Gaza, which, as Yarden was saying, was bad enough. That was a traumatic thing to see in itself. But the scenes of sectarian violence in places where we in names that we weren't accustomed to hearing about, cities like Lod or Haifa or in Acre, these places where you would generally assume that people of different backgrounds live together quite peacefully, that wasn't the case in May. And it was a genuine sense of shock among British Jews in particular here. So what I'd be interested to know, and I'm sure some of our listeners will be interested to know as well, is from our panelists who live in Israel, do they fear a return, or was that a peak from which we can now think, right, we don't want to go there again, let's try and fix it now? Could it happen again?
Yeah, I think it could happen again. I think the fact that it happened the first time shows that it's there, right? It was there all the time. It was underlying, and then something happened and made it happen. And also, we were talking at work at the Paris Center, what we need to do and how can we react and what we need to focus on moving forward, understanding that the minute that it will technically go away, right, that the acts of violence will stop, doesn't mean that the underlying causes, fear and sadness and everything that that came up disappeared as well. So it definitely can happen again. And the role of definitely civil society, but then also the role of government, is to start dealing with these root causes and trying to make sure it doesn't happen again. Or if it does, then on a different scale, on a different level. And it's a lot of hard work. It took us a very long time to come to a point where that was happening in cities across Israel. It's going to take us probably a long time to deal with the root causes and try and address those. And I think that the work of, you know, organizations such as the Abraham Initiatives and the Paris Center and other very important Israeli organizations is really important in different methods and methodologies and you know, agendas. There's room for everyone. There's importance for everyone. But to continue in showing Israelis in general that this is, that we have the possibility, a true possibility for shared living in Israel. And I was really moved to see how quickly, whether it was tech organizations or, you know, the Kupot Cholim, the HMOs in Israel, or the educational system, how quickly the turnaround was with ads in newspapers, ads on TV, showing partnership and showing, you know, the possibility for shared living that was happening throughout the violence, so not post it, to counter the conversation. And, you know, just as a you know, small personal anecdote or story. So I, you know, when we were getting together, I told you that I just had my first baby 3 weeks ago, and she came just on her due date, which was, you know, always a surprise. What were the chances that happens? And the week coming up to that, I was heavily, heavily pregnant, standing in, you know, the building stairwell during the air raid sirens. And I live in Tel Aviv, so it wasn't bad at all. I've got family who live in the south, which was horrendous. Not to mention, of course, Palestinian colleagues and friends and you know, who are West Bank, Gaza, Israel. And so having that complexity of what was going on. But I was heavily pregnant in the stairwell during air raid sirens, which was extremely unpleasant. And then when I went into labor, I got to hospital and they took me into labor and delivery. And then the door opens and two midwives come in, one Arab with a headscarf and one Jewish. And it just looked at my husband and I went, oh, well, of course, this is what's going to happen. Obviously, right? And so my baby was brought into this world by a pair of midwives, one Jewish, one Arab. And the morning of the birth, there was the ceasefire. So obviously this is, you know, my personal story and the hormones and the narrative that we're creating, or I'm creating around it. But it was just, even for me, who's been doing peace building for 16 years, even for me, I need a reminder every once in a while that it's possible. And these two midwives, just that they were the reminder that we can do this. But I also understand how much work we still need to do in order for everyone to remember that and not go back into the box and back into their corners and back into the anger and the hatred every time something happens. So yes, can it happen again? Absolutely. Do we have the tools to deal with that? Yes, hopefully. Do we need to? Yes, we have to. We have to work very, very hard for our future. This is our home.
You know that it's really fascinating you say that about that particular moment that sort of made you think, actually, yes, we can do this if we need to, because the news coverage over here in the UK of the conflict, the most recent conflict, was pretty grim, if I'm honest. It was almost like the news channels here went out of their way to show the region at its worst. And I'll never forget, there was just one random day when I was watching a report on one particular channel that was covering, I know he's quite a famous name, I assume you've all heard of him, but the chef Uri Buri, who is I believe sort of based up in the north of Israel, and he was recalling how his restaurant has been basically annihilated during riots. They burnt it to the ground and absolutely destroyed it. His life's work, this man. Now, what was particularly interesting is that he said, and I quote, he's not bitter. In fact, on the contrary, he has used this opportunity to get together with Muslims, with, you know, all sorts of other individuals in his neighborhood, and they've come together to say, look, actually, we stand united against this. We want peace. We don't want this to carry on. And I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I remember looking at the TV and maybe a bit of a tear in my eye, because I thought to myself, why are we not focusing on this more rather than focusing on causing those divisions and actually encouraging people to pick sides? It's absolutely inspirational to think that there are people out there who, despite suffering the worst violence and sort of demonstrating the worst that humanity has to offer, there are those who can rise to the surface and say, actually, no, enough of this. We don't want this. This is not us. And that's why I think that all of you are incredible in your respective work. But Saad, let's get your opinion on the question that Michael put just before. Do you believe that there is a chance that this could happen again?
I believe that everything can happen, you know, but I want to tell you something. I want to tell you that with this anger and with this feeling that I feel maybe even now or before, it gave me like the power to continue of doing what we are doing in here. Like I didn't see myself like saying, okay, I'm going to stop. There's no solution. There's nothing. I'm doing nothing in here. No, I think when I talk to the children, to the young leaders that we have that participated in our programs, it gave me like the power to continue. And I think something like that telling me a lot about myself and what I'm believing on, like. I want to do it, and I want my kids in the future continue doing that, and the kids of my kids, and like everyone in my village and everyone everywhere. So I have a message, and I think that if I can change one of like 50 people, and this one can change one of 50 people, and the other can change, someday we will reach our goal and we will do it. But every time that things like this happened, it takes us like a few steps, or not a few, maybe a lot of steps back. And we have to work harder and harder and harder and again and again and again with the same, maybe with the same people that we worked before and we talked before, and like fix that situation as many as we can. So I believe that everything can happen, but I believe we will stand here in that time, and we will do what we believe that right for both sides, for humanity, and that's it. Yeah.
And Amnon, what about you? How do you feel about the situation? Is it volatile enough to happen again?
Well, I regret to say that the answer is yes. It has happened before, 20 years ago, just over 20 years ago, during the events of October of 2000, events which resulted in the killing of 13 Arab citizens in Israel by Israeli police fire. And when that happened, most of the clashes happened between the Arab citizens and the Israeli police. Now, the news was that clashes took place between people, you know, between people from both groups. This is very, very alarming because Israeli society is becoming extremely mixed. There are thousands of contact points between Israeli Jews and Arabs, and each of those points can be a source of a fire in a split second. And this is why the remedy, the solution, cannot be the responsibility of citizens. They can definitely help, but it is the government that needs to introduce systematic change in education, in collaboration, in closing gaps between Jewish and Arab communities and towns. And civil society in Israel is very strong. Look, we, as Yarden said, as soon as the hostilities broke out, we almost immediately intervened and suggested interventions, and we helped, and we were not helpless. But we can only advise, we can only help. The main responsibility lies within the Israeli government. We can offer solutions, but they need to be courageous enough to implement them.
I think what all of this, from what I've gathered from speaking to all of you on this episode of the Jewish News Podcast, is that it is possible that if people do come together, that there is a chance, a hope of peace. Maybe it needs a bit of, I hate the cliche, but outside the box thinking, perhaps. But more importantly, and I've thought this for so long, how important it is that we look wherever we are in the world for what unites us and not what divides us. I find it absolutely unbelievable how people are so hell-bent on focusing on division in society rather than actually thinking, do you know what? Who really wants to go around living in fear of where they live, regardless of what side of the political fence they are on? And I believe that it's people like all of you who are going to sort of go some way to helping change that. And please God, may it happen sooner rather than later. Unfortunately, that is all we've got time for this particular episode of the Jewish News Podcast, in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, you can visit gpg.org. All that's left for me to do is to say thank you to our guests, to Saad Barom, to Yarden Le'el, Amnon Beriet Solciano, and also Michael Daventry as well. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast application. That way you will hear any previous episode or be informed when new episodes become available. We also need to say thank you to our producer, Justin Cohen, for putting this show together. Don't forget that for more information on any of the stories that we've featured, you can always go to jewishnews.co.uk. And if you'd like to comment, well, then we'd love to hear from you. Please feel free to email editorial@thejngroup.com. That's editorial@thejngroup.com. From me, Phil Dave, do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Goodbye.